You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We're talking with Kyle Scheidler, director of the Center for Security Policy's Threat Information Office. Kyle, I wanted to ask you about some relations and, I guess, coordinations going on between Hamas, one of the foremost terror groups in the Middle East, and the Islamic State in the Sinai. Now, I bet a lot of our viewers and listeners were not aware that there is an Islamic State in the Sinai. So first, give us a little bit of info about what they're doing there. And second of all, what are they doing with Hamas? Because that does not seem to be good news for any kind of stability in the region.
Right. So Islamic State in the Sinai was originally set up as a terror group called Ansar Bayt al-Maqdis. And it was originally established to target Israel. But after Morsi was overthrown in a combination of popular revolt and military coup, it oriented itself very quickly against the Egyptian government and military forces. Now, the Egyptian military and intelligence believe, probably correctly, that this was in due large part to a relationship with the Muslim Brotherhood. And when the Muslim Brotherhood was ousted in Egypt, they increased their support for Ansar Bayt al-Maqdis to encourage them to target Egyptian forces. Now, what later happened was Ansar Bayt al-Maqdis pledged allegiance to Islamic State and became Islamic State in the Sinai. But that did not break up the relationship between the Brotherhood through Hamas and Islamic State Sinai. Hamas needs Islamic State in the Sinai because they need access to the tunnels that run through Sinai into Gaza to rearm. So you have a curious situation where Iranian arms are being moved through the Sinai with the help of Islamic State in order to facilitate Hamas. So it's a sort of a three-way triangle of bad news.
That is a mess I think we should delve a little deeper in. We're going to continue our discussion with Kyle Scheidler of the Threat Information Office at CSP. Kyle, you were telling us that this Islamic State in the Sinai initially formed when the Muslim Brotherhood was in power in Egypt and was designed to be a problem for Israel. But when the military and others overthrew the Muslim Brothers in Egypt, they then at that point decided to reorient, at least in some way, and that organization started becoming a problem then for the military Egyptian government, which had kind of suppressed the Muslim Brotherhood. And now we've got a triangle of terror with what is now the Islamic State in the Sinai and Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood aiming terror attacks and trouble at both Egypt and Israel. That sounds like about as big a mess as I'd want.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic, and it's one that a lot of analysts get wrong because they don't look at things through a doctrinal perspective. They look at it through almost a corporate perspective, as if all of these organizations are independent competitors in a single business. And that's simply not the case. They are occasional competitors. We've seen Hamas, for example, arrest and even kill Islamic State supporters in Gaza, where, of course, they're in power and they wish to remain in power. But that doesn't mean that they're not willing to enable them in the Sinai against their enemy, Egypt. And so this is a problem we have as Westerners and as Americans when we view things through simply a bipolar dynamic.
So, I mean, it's more of the enemy of my enemy, frenemy of my frenemy. And as long as we're killing someone who is causing us trouble, we can lay off the people who are, if not competitors, at least, you know, co-conspirators in some way.
And we don't have to take responsibility for it, which is something that the Muslim Brotherhood has always been a fan of. We saw after they were overthrown, a number of organizations were established, including groups like the Revolutionary Punishment Group. And all of these groups, while claiming to have no relationship with the Muslim Brotherhood, have a singular mission of targeting the Muslim Brotherhood's enemies. That's awful convenient.
Yeah, I think what they call it is a lot less important than, as you mentioned, there is a unifying ideology. And I think one of the more useful ways we at the center, and you've been a part of this, have started looking at them, is as a global jihad. You know, they may not all agree. They may factionally dispute things and beef over turf occasionally. But the bottom line is they're all about killing infidels and establishing an Islamic caliphate. So looking at these groups, you know, combining when it's useful to them, and, you know, meets the overall goal of global jihad, but also, you know, adding adherence, and the Islamic State in particular has been very good about groups pledging allegiance and causing trouble all around. Now, they've been operating in another theater in the area of Afghanistan. And just recently, and this should shock people, just in the past week, U.S. troops in Afghanistan have been granted the authority to kill ISIS in Afghanistan, whereas before they weren't allowed. It was not in the rules of engagement. I find that stunning. What do we have going on in Afghanistan with ISIS that would have led us to ignore or at least not target them directly?
Well, the administration's policy has always been one of viewing Islamic State as a solely Iraq-Syria problem. They have been very slow to admit that the Islamic State operates outside of those confines and very slow to do anything about it. We've seen them take some action in Libya, but as you said, they've essentially allowed them to run rampant wherever they're able to establish themselves, and they have now done that to some effect in Afghanistan. So in Islamic State is a threat to, obviously, the Afghan government, to our forces. They are also, of course, conflicting with the Taliban itself, who is on the rise once again in Afghanistan. So the idea, and I'm sure it shocks most of our listeners that this was not something that already was taking place, but the reality is we allowed a kind of minor bureaucratic question of what name the group has to prevent us from fighting global jihad. And that's a mistake.
Yeah, that's absurd. But again, I wish it was shocking, but this is the Obama administration. And they, to borrow the term from Andy McCarthy's book, they specialize in willful blindness. We're talking with Kyle Scheidler, director of the Center for Security Policy's Threat Information Office. The bottom line is, in addition to, you know, not targeting ISIS directly until now, we still can't actually target the Taliban unless they initiate hostilities, direct hostilities with our troops there as is, and they're on the rise again.
Well, and that's because we have this view that somehow the best thing for Afghanistan is a negotiated peace process between the Taliban and the Afghan government. And it's complete nonsense. You cannot engage in a peace process with an entity whose sole purpose is to eliminate the other side. And that is the Taliban's goal. So, and in the, by the way, in the middle of the peace process, they continue to attack you with gusto, gaining ground every month. That is not a peace process, and that is not a recipe for success. And yet that is our policy. So while our soldiers have their hands tied such that they're not allowed to target the Taliban, as you said, meanwhile, the Taliban is expanding in every district and Providence, most especially in the South.
Well, unfortunately, as we mentioned, the Obama administration does not seem to be able to find the clue bag as far as a strategy against any of our enemies, and they all seem to be on the rise, and that makes for a scary 2016. Thanks very much, Kyle Scheidler, director of the Threat Information Office for our Center for Security Policy. Up next, we'll be talking with Guy Taylor, National Security Team Leader at the Washington Times. This is Jim Hansen, and you're listening to Secure Freedom Radio.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.